Joining me from Toronto, Ontario, Peter Galindo of Sportsnet Canada. Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Yeah, thank you, Thomas. Thanks for having me on.
So on this episode number 4 for Soccer on the Rise podcast on Last Word on Sports, we will discuss, digest, and dissect, analyze everything that happened in this game where Canada lost 4-1 to the U.S. In Orlando in Exploria Stadium where Orlando City play. Lots to talk about here, lots to unpack. Let's just start with the essential, shall we? How much did the role of key players being out, as Stefan Bradley, Pulisic, and Arthur, by them not being available, how much was that impact the result? It looks like Greg Berhalter got the job done without them.
He definitely did. Very much an understatement. It definitely had an impact, just because when you make 7 changes to your team from the last time you played, which of course was that win over, or that loss to Canada, it's going to change things a lot. But I don't necessarily feel the personnel that was on the pitch for the U.S. changed anything dramatically. I just think they made adjustments or improvements from the game last month that really changed the momentum of the two teams from a month ago. Canada was trying to press them, trying to harry them. The overall tactics were fine when it came to trying to recover the ball and maybe trying to exploit the U.S., but on the flip side, the U.S. were much more dynamic on and off the ball. They were more structured and organized off of the ball, and they were more incisive on their counters. That was really the one change, because if you look at the attempts, they only had 12 shots, and yet they get 4 goals out of it. That's by capitalizing on set pieces. That's by being lethal in transition. When you finally are able to counter with, you know, 2 or 3 players kind of connecting with each other, as opposed to just Pulisic dribbling aimlessly by himself with no one to connect with like it was last month, that's going to make a massive difference for the U.S. And if you just look at the expected goals, I think it was close to 1.97 in favor of the U.S. to 0.99 for Canada. Yet the attempts were about the same. I think it was 12 to 11 in favor of the U.S. It just goes to show you, they were just way more clinical in front of goal, and they caught Canada napping at decisive times.
Definitely. It certainly feels like the game just got out of their hands. You know, it just from the get-go, they just came firing in all cylinders. You did mention it, touch briefed on it. For people who don't know you, you're somebody who loves analytics and tactics. Davies at left back, was that the right call? I know a couple of weeks ago he started for Bayern Munich against Dortmund and had the responsibility of marking England forward Jordan Sancho.
That is correct. I'm going to say this first as a caveat. It's always easy for us to look back and say that was a mistake when the coaching staff has to make a decision in that moment, in that pressured environment. It's not like Football Manager where you can reload the save and then go again, right? However, you feel like after what happened against Haiti, that lessons would have been learned in this regard. Yes, Alphonso Davies has started 5 straight games for Bayern Munich across all competitions. That is totally 100% true. And he has improved gradually with each appearance. But there's a big difference doing that for Bayern Munich and a big difference doing that for Canada. At Bayern Munich, and this is by Davies' own admission, after the win against Olympiacos in the Champions League, I believe it was the 6th of November, he said or was asked about playing at left back for Bayern, and he answered by basically saying, and I quote, "I have a world-class left back alongside me in David Alaba, which makes it easier for me. He helps and guides me on the pitch." And this is the thing. At Bayern Munich, he has those experienced players, and he's in that club setting where he's used to it day in and day out. It's a more structured, tactical setting. And when you have Alaba and Kingsley Coman and Joshua Kimmich basically guiding you on the pitch, as well as occasionally the coach guiding you on the pitch, that's going to help you. And he had a lot of protection on that side, whereas tonight against the U.S., he didn't have that, and he found himself dribbling aimlessly into dangerous positions. Of course, his giveaway early in the game led to the corner that opened the scoring for the U.S. He leaves Jordan Morris unmarked on that corner, which allowed him to score. It's very easy to say, yes, he's definitely gotten the minutes at left back, and therefore he will do well for Canada, because it doesn't quite translate. And the fact that John Herdman had a proper left back in Sam Adekubi available to him, and who has been playing regularly for Vålerenga as well, it's a little bit curious, especially when him and Davies combine so well against Cuba. Yes, it's Cuba, but when you have a proper left back, even if you make the two changes you made to the defense, just by having a proper left back, you're automatically a little bit more reinforced as opposed to playing with Davies, as we saw tonight.
Definitely, and just to add on to that, like you said, Bayern Munich, world-class club, very different to be doing it because you're just one out of 11 players. Every player on the field is doing its job, its part for the team, as opposed to when he comes to Canada, the spotlight is all on him, and it shouldn't be, you know, in the eyes of the media, he's just a 19-year-old kid at the end of the day. Focusing more on the team overall, quote, if everything, the last game against the U.S. at home in Toronto in the month of October, why do you think that John Herdman decided to change players? You know, we saw it in Cornelius being taken out and Henry being put into the lineup. Although Cornelius came in, by the way, Henry came out injured, but Cornelius came in the second half and played very, very good. And obviously, Cavallini coming in as well, Stefano Statio making his debut. So if everything's working well, if everything's gelling well, why not just stick with the same starting 11 as they did in the 2-0 win?
So I completely agree with you. I think that when it comes to the defense especially, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that's what I touched on in my post-match report on Sportsnet. When you have a defense that was able to get a clean sheet against the United States, the very same United States team, for the most part, because Areola played in that game, Morris played in that game, a few of those players did start against Canada in October, then it would make sense to keep that same team together, because chemistry is so important with defenders. I've spoken to Daniil Henry about this, to Ashton Morgan about this, Richie Larea, and I've asked them, you know, how important is chemistry when you are a defender, especially a center back? And they said, well, it's everything, because if you don't have an understanding, then things can just break down like a snowball effect. And that's exactly what we saw. The Daniil Henry Steven Vitoria partnership has never started a competitive game together until tonight. So they don't have much chemistry, if at all. I think they have one appearance together, and that was in a friendly win over Mauritania back in 2016. So by basically switching the entire left side of the defense, it just throws it into disarray. The defensive structure is disjointed. And as we saw, the U.S. took advantage on counterattacks when the Canadian fullbacks were pushed very high up. And this is why Kamal Miller started in October, because by being more reserved in his positioning, you at least have three defenders back to protect against the counterattack. And that's something that you should always do to defend those direct passes, to those counterattacks. Have the numerical advantage in defense to make sure that if three players bomb forward from the other team, you're at least 1v1 against everybody, and the passing lanes are a little bit more cut off. But by having only two, and Vitoria and Henry were like headless chickens at times in those situations, it's going to lead to problems. So, I mean, from start to finish in the first half, it was just a major issue. And then Cornelius came on, as you said, and looked very, very assured of himself. He's very patient, and that's something that Daniil Henry is not. He can be very rash with his challenges. But as we saw when Cornelius came on, he wasn't rushing into anything. He would guide Jesse Sardes to the wing he'd want him to go to. It was just very assured for such a young defender, and that's why, partially, why he should have started.
Yeah, and Daniil Henry, I just have to flat out say it. He's a guy that has given nightmares to Canadian soccer fans. Red cards, handballs, you call it, you know, a couple Gold Cups, a couple World Cup fixtures, mistake, broke. It's been – so when I saw him in the starting 11, I think maybe some people, you know, started asking themselves questions and getting a little bit nervous. Obviously, excuses. There's not much to make here. I think a lot is to be on the game plan that they didn't execute, and a lot has to be on the players as well. But let's talk the conditions. The pitch looked very, very slippery. It almost seemed like in the half, you know, Kai, Piet, Osorio, and Arfield, the quartet, couldn't put a couple passes together like they. And then when the U.S. had the ball, and then they were kind of pushing up, pressuring, and getting in there to win those 50-50 battles, it just seemed like. It was more of a tiki-taka, you know, like from the South American. But at the same time, it felt like the fluidity was not there. You know, it just felt like they struggled. And John Herdman touched on it a bit on his press conference, where he talked about the possession in the game. But could you just like elaborate why maybe the conditions factored in, and as opposed to maybe it could have been something different if they were playing in a dry pitch at noon.
Yeah, they might have preferred the humidity of Orlando with no rain whatsoever as opposed to this. But when you have a slippery surface with rain, especially when it is humid outside, I mean, you know, we would know this being from, you know, being of South American descent ourselves, we sometimes have to deal with this too. It makes such a difference because when the ball is rolling that fast, you can't control it as well. You can't hit the same sort of passes with the same weight. You have to adjust on the fly. Even when you're dribbling, the ball can get away from you, which we saw at times. And this led to some harsher looking challenges. You know, Lucas Cavallini going in two-footed on some challenges because he lost the ball. And it will affect your buildup. Absolutely it will. It was hurting the U.S. too, because anytime they were trying to play a square pass, you know, the ball would get away from them, and then a Canadian player, whether it was Arfield or David or whoever, would take the ball and then go the other way. So it was a problem for both teams. The difference was the U.S. didn't concede as much space in those transitional moments that Canada did. But absolutely, I think the slick surface definitely caught not just the Canadian team by surprise, but both teams by surprise.
Now, Canada was very poor in defense, but would you agree that on a couple of occasions, Canada looked dangerous? They just didn't create anything in the final third.
I would say so, yeah. I think the tactics from Herdman were more or less correct. Mm-hmm. I just think the selection was wrong, which we touched on earlier. But in terms of how they were getting into the final third, whenever they did get Serginho Dest or Tim Ream isolated 1v1, they were thriving. There was that shout on Scott Arfield in the first half. I feel like his embellishment maybe led to the referee not making the call, because it definitely was a foul. It's just up to the referee to determine, well, okay, did he kind of sell this a bit too much, or what's the situation here? But then in the second half, I know that at that point they're up 3 goals and that makes a huge difference, but they were getting some opportunities to cross it into the box. They were causing John Brooks a lot of problems. And they were testing Brad Guzan. They just, again, as it came down to it, the U.S. just punished Canada's mistakes more than Canada punished the United States' mistakes. I mean, I know it's simple to say, but I mean, that in the end was the story of the game.
Certainly. And let's analyze, shall we, just what this loss means for Canada. It dropped 10 points tonight. If they would have gone a draw, they would have gone into the semifinals of the Nations League in CONCACAF. But nonetheless, that the goal was very clear and very important. The goal, Peter, was to really make it to the hex. I mean, this is really the goal. I mean, in the press conference, Herdman said that March and June is going to be critical. Like, the Canadian Soccer Association has to organize friendlies against higher-ranked opponents in order to get something out of that and ascend, because there's a couple – I think there's one or two more games left to be played. I believe one of them is actually going on right now or just finished. I can't remember, Mexico and Panama.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong. But how – because – In any sport, not just soccer, but in any sport, you always have to want to depend on yourself. And when you have to rely on the help of others, then it becomes tricky. I think I was told by somebody that that the CSA had actually hired a professional mathematician, you know, to kind of run the numbers and everything, but. Definitely. What kind of numbers are what kind of games are we going to have to be seeing as well as the March and June windows before it locks itself?
It obviously depends on what happens to El Salvador. They should win both of their remaining games in League B. They have Montserrat and then I believe it's the Dominican Republic to close it out. They did lose to the Dominican back in September, so there is some hope, you think, of them dropping points there, but They basically have to lose both of their games now in order to keep Canada in sixth place. And I think they'd have to get other help from, you know, Haiti not winning and then Panama not winning and all these other teams. But now they have to schedule friendlies against teams above them in the rankings, like you said, but also teams that they would probably deem beatable. Now, there aren't many, say, top 20 nations in the world that are, quote-unquote, beatable from a Canadian point of view, but they're going to have to try and get something going. And the fact that there is still qualifying in Europe, it probably eliminates all the European
teams. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, and then Asian and African qualifying is underway as well, so you're probably not going to have any opportunities for them. South America is probably the only route you have at this point in time. But again, qualifying for them starts in March. So
yeah, that's right.
It's going to be very, very difficult to get something against a quality opponent. But look, the fixtures for South America come out very soon. We shall see who is available. But typically speaking, every team plays twice in each. I mean, you know this, Thomas, but every team plays twice in every single window because they play two qualifiers per window.
Yeah.
So we have to see who's available. But it's going to be tough to schedule those friendlies.
Now, let's discuss in depth, goal by goal. Obviously, more could have been done in all the four goals. That it almost feels, Peter, like that the Mexico game that they played in Denver, because it felt like we were there, but we weren't, and it was just this thing of momentum, and you definitely think that this team can be. Is certainly capable, you know. Like, it's not like, I have to say, back in 2012, you know, so-called the dark years in Canadian soccer, hashtag unattached FC. Back then, it was very, very arguable that the player-by-player quality just wasn't there. But it's not the case. Like, we have some very, very good players playing in the Belgian League, in the English Championship, in Liga MX, in the Bundesliga. We have very, very good players as well, Saint-Pierre and Marc-Anthony Kai, as well as Borjan, you know, Champions League keeper. But the four goals, preventable, yes or no?
Well, the first two were definitely preventable. The first one was just Canada falling asleep. Jackson Ewell was wide open at the top of the box. Canada was lined up mainly to defend zonally at the near post and then along the back post. But the entire right side of the box, if you're looking at it from a TV perspective, the entire right side of the box was open. So Arriola was able to hit a low pass into Jackson Ewell at the top of the box. He was unmarked. Larea was late getting there. He shoots it. It deflects. It lands, fortunately for the U.S., right on the foot of Jordan Morris, who then scores. Now, Alphonso Davies should have been marking him tighter. He was. He kind of lost Morris when the corner was taken. And then Morris was free. Now, when you concede a goal that early, that's going to change everything, right? I mean, it's obviously a very impactful time to score a goal, because basically everything that you've prepared for goes out the window at that point. So you can see that Canada was a little bit flustered for about 10 minutes, but then the second goal, I mean, there are really no excuses for that. Fullbacks were caught high up the pitch. Stephen Vitoria misjudges the crossover to Jordan Morris. Borean, for some strange reason, decides to come out and try to close down Morris. And then that allows Sardes to just basically tap it into an open goal. I can kind of see where Borean was coming from, being a former goalkeeper. But when you have players coming back, when you had, I believe it was actually Vitoria, he was actually running in to close down that lane anyways. And then you had, I believe it was Daniil Henry marking Sardes. So if you just cover your near post, you're probably safe. And then even if Morris has a shot, you should have it covered. So that was certainly preventable. The third goal, again, another set piece. They fell asleep. Tim Ream catches the Canadian defenders napping, and then another goal for them. And then the fourth goal, I mean, when you're trying to chase a goal, when you're Canada, you're going to be exposed defensively. So there's really nothing you could have done there. But it was just a litany of errors on the first goal and just mental mistakes in general.
And you touched base on your last sentence there, mental mistakes. Borean, he seemed outraged, and good point. I mean, it was very debatable. You know, as someone who, I'm sure nobody really reads the FIFA rules manual. No, I don't think anybody owns the book. Definitely hard to, on that aspect, but definitely need to keep your emotions in check, right? Like keep their composure, because the game is just as much mental as it is physical.
Absolutely it is. And when you look back at the Haiti game, Milan Borean was also irate at Marcus Godinho after, remember when he kind of conceded that terrible goal? He was kind of caught with the ball between his feet. He was just tearing into Marcus Godinho for not basically making himself available for that pass. And, you know, I don't know what it is, but it seems like when Milan Borean gets that animated, he just seems to kind of, almost in terms of his like quality of shot stopping, it just crumbles.
I feel like he zooms crumbles. Out, right? Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, look, I never played professionally, but being a former goalkeeper, yes, you can yell at your defenders. Yes, you can tell them where to position yourself, but you cannot, especially after the incident where Davies flicked up the ball and then headed it back to him, you cannot be losing your composure like that, because it transmits to the rest of the team. If you yourself are calm but firm, then I think that transmits to the rest of the team, and then that's fine. But, you know, we've seen him do this before. He's not comfortable with the ball at his feet. Listen, I've been kind of talking about this with other colleagues. I would not be opposed to seeing Maxime Crépeau getting a chance in the next few games here, because he's just as good of a shot stopper as Borean, and he's better with the ball at his feet. And the way you can see that John Herdman wants to play, he wants to play that fluid passing game from the back. You need to have a goalkeeper who's comfortable in those positions. I know Borean is a Champions League goalkeeper, but you also have to look at the tactical fit sometimes. And Crépeau is in form. He had a fantastic season for Vancouver. I think it might be time to start looking at him a little bit, because look, he's been on the end of some beatings this season as well for Vancouver. So he's kept his composure throughout. I think he would be a calming presence. And even at the very least, just give him a chance to show that, hey, listen, your form has been good. You deserve this chance. Here is your reward. We're going to give you a cap or two, which should have happened at this point, but that's another story.
On the U.S., is this enough for Berhalter to really silence his critics?
Well, just by looking at U.S. national team Twitter right now, which is maybe not a good barometer of determining the temperature.
For the U.S., it's never going to be good enough, let's be honest.
It's true. I mean, it's never a good barometer to judge this on, but it's kind of hilarious how you see them lose to the U.S. and it's an embarrassment, but then they beat Canada. It's like, okay, well, you should have beaten Canada anyways. Like, this doesn't change anything. So I feel like the anti-Berhalter folk will still be anti-Berhalter until something dramatic changes. Like, you know, they make the World Cup, or they win a Gold Cup, or something happens dramatically that just changes the momentum. Because, you know, a lot of American fans, they look at it and think, okay, yeah, great. You know, you did what you should have done a month ago. and it finally happened tonight, but that doesn't erase what happened previously, because they look at his record against teams ranked lower than the U.S. and they think, yeah, but this is what you should be doing. It's against the better teams that we need to show our worth, and against Mexico and the like, they haven't really done that yet outside of a couple of friendly results.
And to finish off, Peter, what's next for Canada?
Well, you just got to hope that El Salvador loses in the short term. In the long term,
it's Montserrat.
Against Montserrat, against the Dominican Republic. I mean, it is looking like a long shot. Or hope that the U.S. loses to Cuba or draws against Cuba to get you into the Nations League semifinals, but that's unlikely.
Bring back the mathematician.
Yes, got to bring back the mathematician for sure. Look, in the long term, I said it after the Haiti game, you just hope lessons are learned. And I was saying that, you know, you can give a coach a game like that as long as he learns from past mistakes. And it looked like heading into this game that Herdman and the staff had learned. But those same issues from the Haiti debacle were there. And now it really makes you wonder, okay, can they actually build sustainable results? Because that's what was, I think, so disappointing from a Canadian perspective. They had that massive win over the U.S. People started to believe. He was starting to silence some critics. And then all that work has just been overwritten by this result, which is unfortunate because they had momentum and now they lost it. So now they're going to have to work twice, three times, four times as hard to get it back.
Yeah, it seems like this love, hate, admiration for Herdman is really on a game-to-game basis, really, as far as the fans go. Peter, thanks so much for joining me. But just one last thing. Canada went back to a back four, which is something that that people were really, really, really asking for after playing what was against Minnows. Many people argue that didn't help whatsoever. Yeah, sure, you captured a couple players here and there, brought back all the – I'm actually surprised, to be honest with you, Peter, that they brought back the entire team. You know, if you're a junior Hoylet and you're playing at a Cardiff City in the Premier League and they say, okay, yeah, okay. Like, it's one thing to be called up an international official competition, but then say, hey, who are you playing? I'm playing St. Vincent Grenadines. And there's nothing you can do about it because FIFA rules, right? And defense, it's a very, very, very weak, very concerning for a lot of people, including myself. I actually tweeted this out earlier. If I were John Herdman, I would honestly start a global search any defender who is eligible for Canada, and I'm sure there are. I guarantee you there are. And just to throw one name out there, Martin Amous, you know, playing out of Danubio in the Uruguayan Primera División. And because, you know, Vittori is 32. Daniel Henry can be shaky sometimes. Cornelius is young. He looks like a very good player. Kamal Miller, you know, he's been switched back to the left-back positioning. Zator and Didich have been really brought into the fold. So, honestly, the center-back position, it's anyone's game. No one has really been able to claim that spot. I'm actually, to be honest with you, I'm very surprised not to see a guy like Mandrake or James. I don't know if it's personal. I don't know if it's club commitment. I don't know if it's because of the club commitment that Herdman decided not to bring him back. But you have a Danish Superliga center back, and not to even mention the Fakaya Tomori situation. He got called up to England but didn't play, so he's still eligible to Canada. But at the same time, you're really hoping for something to happen there, you know, for him not to get called up, and then it doesn't really. It seems almost like the chances of him playing for Canada are so slim that why even bother wasting any time and energy, you know? But what do you think? Like, because if Canada wants to make it to Qatar, we need quality defending. Our front three is exceptional, I have to say. We have depth. The front three, and then you have three very good forwards and wingers on top of that, and you still have one or two guys like Teshua Kandeli and Liam Miller, or in this case Kyle Laren, that they get left out. So defense, it has to be fixed, doesn't it?
It definitely does. Unfortunately for Canada, the player pool with center backs is not going to be as deep in quality as, say, the forwards or the midfield. And I think that's the reality of the situation. Yes, if Fikayo Tomori somehow, some way changes his international allegiance, if Gareth Southgate is enough of an idiot to not give him a cap for England, then that is the dream for Canadians. There are options out there. Mandrakar James, everybody mentions him. I think the reason why he's not called up is because he hasn't played regularly for his club. If he was, no question he'd be here. So at this point, it's just kind of hope that those guys do play and that they can kind of scour the globe to find other defenders. There's a reason why Didich and Zator are getting call-ups to the national team. It's because the position is up for grabs. So it's literally, look, if you can shine, if you can do well, then the position is yours. And as you said, Stephen Vitoria is in his 30s. He still has another, you would imagine, year or two left at the very top of his game. But then after that, which, I mean, in the international game, it can change quickly. From there, it's going to be a bit of a decline. So you got to start looking for the next one. But I've always said it. You can mask certain defensive deficiencies with good tactics. And against the U.S. last month, that's exactly what happened. But this month, not so much. And one of the things that really, and I'll use a perfect example here, which I know will really hit home for you, Thomas, but if you look at those great Chilean sides from the Bielsa days all the way up until 2016 when they won the second of back-to-back Copa America titles, their defenders were not the tallest, they were not the most technically gifted, but they defended well as a unit, and they were near impenetrable to get past. And that is what made them such a strong team for so many years. You can mask certain defensive deficiencies with tactics. It's just about drilling it into the players and making sure that they stay disciplined in that regard. Because right now, that's what Canada's going to have to do, because the depth at center back especially is just not really there.
Yeah, and what you said, it really did hit home for me. But the defensive unit of that Chilean team, I'm sorry, I have to set out say it. They fought. They ran every inch. And I have to say it again. Anyone listening, I'm sorry. But looking at some of Canadian players, I'm not going to name anybody. I'm not going to single anyone out. I'm sorry, man. You're losing 2-0 and you're walking on the field. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
It's unacceptable. I mean, what are you doing?
It is. It is, because you would never see that
in
a lot of teams, yeah. I mean, especially in South America, the fans would just get on you for not running back or tracking back. Like, they would be irate. You've probably seen it. I've seen it live, watching with family members. Like, if defenders or players, even if they're, like, you know, left or right wingers, if they're not tracking back, they are screaming at the TV and all kinds of expletives to get back into position to help defend.
We see it all the time with Messi.
That was so shocking. Yeah, for sure.
Asking him to track back. It's an 11-man team. It's not a one-man team. Everybody defends except you, you know. But, yeah, no, absolutely. Just to leave it on that note, I really feel the talent is there. I really think this team is very, very good. But I just think they need that more competitive. They need to understand that at the end of the day, you're representing your country, and it matters, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Peter. I'm very thankful that you decided to take the time to join me, and I'm sure I'll have you on many other times in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Always happy to come on, and thank you for the invite.